This is the Financial Side of Life podcast, episode 11.
Welcome to the Financial Side of Life podcast. Our mission, to empower you with smart financial strategies and show that it's possible to get a college education, save, invest, retire, or do whatever makes sense to help you live your best life. We'll meet amazing people and professionals who will share stories about how they do it, and together we hope to bring a little sanity to your complex financial life. And now, here is your host, certified financial planner pro and founder of Avea Financial Planning, Angie Ferbot-LaRossi.
Welcome back to the second half of our interview with Scott Naylor. Last time, he shared with us how he started to get into trouble with his student loans. And in this episode, we'll hear more of his story.
So, you know, you're several years into this whole story. And, you know, when we kind of talked with you originally about coming on and talking on our podcast, you had some pretty strong things that you wanted to share.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm wondering, you know, what would you like for people to take away from your story? What are some of the things you want people to know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, here's my story. I was raised, you know, I'm 50 now. So I was raised up, you're going to go to college. I went to college. I think my parents paid for it all. I never saw a bill. You know, they didn't borrow. I don't know why. If it was just affordable, I don't know what the difference then to now. But this was, you know, in the 80s. I've never personally had any student loan at all. Now I'm a parent of two high school kids.
Yeah.
We expect the same of them for the most part. You know, if that's what they want to do, we expect them to go to college. Well, here in my state, a state college runs somewhere around $25,000 a year.
Yeah.
That's a $100,000 investment for two kids times two.
Yeah.
So, you know, what should I know? Because I haven't even gone through this myself.
I know.
I've only read and heard and listened. And so what is it that you want people like me who are getting into this situation to know?
That's such a good question. And it's such a difficult question. And I totally sympathize with you, because my son, Elijah, who was born when I started teaching, he's a senior now. It's funny, because here we are wrestling with that same question, even though I've had this horrible experience. I found myself thinking, but how he needs a college education. It's so important. How do I help him pay for it? And the reality is, that's the real crisis, I think, in America. It is that we all know we need to get all of our kids to have a college education, or at least access to it. We want to encourage our kids to go to college, but $100,000 for a state, the University of Maine, Orono, is about $24,000 a year, $100,000 for a bachelor's degree. What do you do? So our solution at this point has been sort of take it a day at a time. But, you know, what I think is really important that I've been talking to my seniors at the high school about is, I guess, being realistic and really being patient. You know, you have to really think about why are you going to college? You know, it's funny, because there are actually a lot of trades that need people. And you can go to, say, for example, the community college and learn a trade in being an electrician or in construction and find yourself with a job. But we have in America for a long time sort of preached this idea that we all need to go to a four-year college. You know, serious students go to a four-year college. So one of the things that we've talked about in our household is the community college. And I'm really grateful, because we live about 4 miles from Central Maine Community College, and it's only – if you're a full-time student there, I think it's only about $3,500 a year, and you can get a two-year degree. And so we're talking about that. Like, how can we chip away at this thing in little ways? Obviously, you know, applying for financial aid. There's the FAFSA, you know, the free financial aid forms. And there is financial aid out there, you know. But at the end of the day, there's always a pretty good-sized bill even after that for most people. So I think – considering what it is you want your college degree to do for you. Like if I had thought about that, right? When I decided, I think I want to be a teacher, the first thing I should have done is said, well, how much is the lowest pay in Maine for teachers? Because at least then, if I know I can make it on that much, you know, it'll always maybe go up from there. So, you know, knowing what it is you want to do with that college degree and how much very realistically, and if not maybe even sort of looking at the bottom of the averages, you know, is it, what are you going to make, or what do you think you're going to make? And then make the decisions as far as like, you know, I mean, getting an English degree versus getting an engineering degree, you know, there are different jobs and salaries and stuff. And so maybe the investment in how much you need to, you know, to pay for it makes more sense for certain for certain degrees. So I guess, you know, exactly. Really thinking about what you're going to do with it's a huge piece, you know, and if it's going to pay you enough potentially.
Well, one of the things that I've learned too through my studies in this area is that sort of as a rule of thumb, and that's a good starting point for many people, is that after you've graduated from college, you know, what is that likely first year salary? And like you just said, you know, the difference between an engineer and a teacher, there's a difference in that pay, that first year pay right out of college. Mm-hmm. And to try to do some research, and there's ways out there you can find that out, to understand what is that first year salary. And as a rule of thumb, you don't want to take out any more in student loan than you will be paid that very first year out of college.
Yeah, that's very smart.
And the other rule of thumb is that for every $10,000 in student loans, it equals to $100 a month
payment. Kind of, it's very similar to a mortgage in that sense. I mean, yeah, you want to think about it, how much you're borrowing in terms of how much your monthly payment will be. Yeah, even just starting at something like the Bureau of Labor Statistics is a good place to go, because you can look at where are the salaries for my hopeful profession, and also looking demographically, because, you know, we experienced that too. My wife is a medical assistant, and she works at a local doctor's office here in Maine. The national average for that is something fairly decent. I think it was, if I remember right, when we looked it up, it was something like $18 an hour. But in Maine, it was significantly lower than that. So, you know, thinking about where are you going to live, and is the pay, is the pay comparable to somewhere else? There's also a website I found called, Glassdoor.com. It was pretty cool, that I wish I had known about when I was in school, where you can look up just about any career in almost any place in the world and see what people are making, at least in the last year, on average. And then think about, you know, okay, if I'm starting out as a new person in that career, what am I going to make? And then, like you said, think about, okay, for every $10,000 I borrow, it's at least $100 a month on a loan.
Yeah, because I don't know if it was you that said, but, you know, I talked to a lot of people about this topic, and so many people will say, you know, things to the effect that a high school student oftentimes doesn't even know what interest is. They think they're taking out a $10,000 loan, that they pay back a $10,000 loan, and that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, then to even understand, okay, so no, that's not the case, that there's this thing called interest that you have to pay too. And so to have just even some of those general guidelines that the $10,000 a month means $100 a month payment is a good starting point for a lot of people, because it's a very basic concept that everybody can understand. So
That's really important. And amortization, I had no idea how that worked until I actually bought my house. When I realized that in student loans work this way too, when you start paying on a student loan, the bank starts off by taking the bulk of that $100 a month for your $10,000 loan in interest.
Right.
And it takes quite a few years before you really start to chip away at the principal, at the, you know, the part you borrowed. So if you wanted to get ahead, you'd have to be able to think about that much more that you want to maybe be able to put toward the principal or whatever. So it can really get difficult, particularly early in your career, because you're mostly paying for interest, just like you would on a house for the first 15 years or so.
Right. And a good calculator to even sort of visualize that is something like bankrate.com.
Yeah.
And you could pull up a mortgage calculator, and you can see very clearly that that $1,000 payment, only, you know, $800 is going to the interest and the other two is going to principal. And where does that start to flip flop? You know, it's quite a few years out, just like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Just knowing what interest rate, and the government sets those. I think last time I checked, they're ranging between 4.5% and 6% And if you have a 6% loan, that's a pretty hefty interest rate. That's not, I mean, that makes a big difference. So if you can plug those numbers in, if you borrow $10,000 and you put that in at 6%, it'll really give you a sense of what your payments are going to look like on a student loan.
Right. Again, a good calculator. Mm-hmm. Calculator can help you figure that out. Online calculator.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
You said you were part of that Facebook group, the Student Loan Justice Group.
Yeah.
Are you active in there? And what is the talk in a group like that? What are they proposing? Because I'm not familiar with that particular group.
I'm really glad you asked that. That's a good question. Alan Collins is the organizer of that, and he's been at it for a long time. I remember coming across that quite a few years ago. And what they're really working on now that I think is pretty important, and I'm actually starting a group of people here in Southern Maine. But what his and that group's main focus right now is trying to restore bankruptcy protections to student loans, which they years ago, if you filed for bankruptcy, your student loans could be discharged along with your credit cards or whatever other debt you were asking to have discharged. Most people probably would not want to go through bankruptcy. It's not fun. It doesn't help your credit. In fact, it damages it for quite a while. But the reason why Student Loan Justice and Alan and everyone are pushing for legislation along that lines is because the general feeling is that it would sort of give the lenders some risk in the whole thing. You know, right now there's not a lot for them. It's guaranteed money, because if you can't make your payments, they take your payments. So whether I've heard of people and read about people that are in their 60s and 70s who have their Social Security checks garnished each month for a certain amount of money to go toward their student loans because they fell behind and didn't make their payments. So I think that the thinking is, and I think I agree with this as much as I don't think I would encourage people to get, I mean, I always think it's better to try to pay what you owe. I don't think people should try to, get out of it by, some clever means. But I think if there is the potential that you could file for bankruptcy and walk away from that debt, then the banks would have to, or the lenders would really have a risk in loaning it to you, which of course is, it's kind of a paradox though, because I've always thought, but who's going to risk loaning a 19-year-old $30,000 or $100,000 without any kind of collateral? I don't think, I remember when I was about 19, there weren't a lot of other banks besides the student lenders who were interested at all in giving me loans. I remember I wanted to get a drum set at one point, and I went to the local bank, and they thought I was crazy to ask them for a loan to get drums. And they were right to, because I didn't have any other than my job, which I'd only had for a few years. There wasn't really a lot to say to them. There's a low risk. I will definitely pay you back. With student loans, though, the government guarantees it. Student loans are guaranteed. So the government says to the bank, if you loan a student who's full-time in school up to, I don't know what the maximum is these days, but it's over $100,000, we guarantee that. And so in other words, if you don't pay it, they'll make sure you do. So why wouldn't they loan it, right? And why there's no vested interest in them working with you, really, if you can't make payments. In fact, they make a tremendous amount of money on the defaults and on problems like I had where the paperwork just didn't happen to get through. And I even have seen my balances increase, and I've been on the phone for hours trying to get a good explanation for why, and there isn't really one. I've had my balances increase without real explanation. But why would they worry about it? They get their money either way, and particularly if you default, they get lots of extra money because they can charge you exorbitant fees in the tens of thousands of dollars. So I think bankruptcy protection, which is what Student Loan Justice is working toward, would at least make people take a step back and ask if this system makes sense, the lending.
Right. And you've used the term predatory, and that's a term that gets kind of used in this conversation in general. And that's sort of how it feels at times, because it's like these larger institutions, very sophisticated with sophisticated products, are preying on young people.
Absolutely. It's terrible. And young people, that are doing what they've grown up being told they're supposed to do, which is go to college. You know, it's the American dream. Mm-hmm. You go to college. Mm-hmm. And they like you said, there are plenty of students that don't even sort of really understand the basics of how an interest rate works, let alone navigating a really complex loan system. I can't imagine sending my son, who'll be 18 this summer. He's going to start at the community college taking some courses. I can't imagine him sending him to sit down with a lender to buy a house without any advice, support, or you know, education. That's the scary thought, that he could sit down and borrow $150,000, $200,000 to buy a house. I wouldn't expect him to understand how to do that or navigate that without a lot of help. But that's kind of what it seems like we're doing with kids with student loans. We're sort of saying to them, here, just sign here. And there's a lot for them to understand. And so it is predatory. And I wish that I struggle with this because I really want to be positive and I don't want to sound like I'm just complaining, you know. But my experience has been that it just seems it can't be a coincidence that every time you run into trouble or you need something in the way of paperwork or verification or whatever, there's always a headache. We kind of joke around now at the house about how I've got to take time off of work to make sure I have time to get all the paperwork processed properly 3 times for verifying my income for the income-based payments, because surely the first and second time there'll be something, you know, vaguely wrong with it. But anyway, I don't want to belabor the point, but it definitely has predatory aspects to it, and it doesn't take too much digging around to see that certain people have benefited a great deal from it, and it's not right, you know. Our kids deserve better.
So you said in your own home you're exploring ways in which you plan to help. You've got more than one child?
We have a my son is 17. He's going to graduate from Edward Little High School this spring. And my daughter is, oh my gosh, she's 13. She'll be 13 in about a week here. And she wants to be a veterinarian. So I have no idea how that's going to – I think you have to go to school for like 10 years for that. One thing that we've done, even though it seems like trying to empty a lake with a teaspoon, is we do set aside money every week for college savings. We have a 529 savings plan for both kids. And I figure even if it's only whatever it is I could come up with, I've at least done something to help them get started. With Elijah, he wants to go into graphics art, graphics design. So he's going to do 2 years at the community college. And I might take a second job if I have to, but I figure whatever it takes, we'll get him through that first 2 years without a penny of debt. It's very inexpensive anyway. And what I've learned is a lot of students that go that path actually end up with very ideal situations with the four-year college, because they get the two-year degree, then they apply to the four-year college and find pretty decent financial aid, not to mention that, you know, they basically cut the cost considerably of a four-year college. Colleges are more and more accepting these days. Every college we talked to was more than happy to consider taking a lot of these credits and transfer after 2 years. And then with Emma, I guess because she's only 13, I still have 5 years. But the idea of saving anything in 5 years that would be enough to even get started on. But, you know, she can go to community college for 2 years and work on veterinary technician. And then maybe she could, you know, go from there. So we're just taking it a day at a time. But like you, you know, looking at colleges for your children, it's pretty hard to wrap your head around what that looks like. You just have to kind of be practical, patient, and take your time, I guess. Maybe they go part-time for a while. I even encouraged Elijah, look, if you have to go to school part-time for 8 years, but you don't owe anything when you get out, you're only in your early 20s. I remember thinking I had to rush through it when I was in school. I thought, well, I graduated with high honors. I was so proud of myself. But, you know, the cost of that was I borrowed a lot of money so I wouldn't have to work so I could study late at night. Now, maybe I could have gone part-time and taken a little bit longer but not owed as much. You know, there's that we're kind of thinking about that too.
Well, and I think those are the kinds of solutions people are going to be forced to use.
Yeah, for now.
Because that's really one of several ways that you can deal with the overall expense of going to college and come out debt-free.
A lot of my students try very hard to work on athletics my students at Scarborough, that you see them, they take on every activity and every athletic opportunity they have, hoping that maybe that will lead to some kind of financial aid. And sometimes it does, which is great. That's another path I think, particularly parents I've seen really pushing their kids to do all kinds of activities and athletics and things to try to get better financial aid.
Yeah, and it seems like I've come across some statistic, and don't quote me, but it was somewhere just like 1% of financial aid goes to sports.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. It's definitely not the big – I think sometimes
– Or merit aid.
Right. Yeah, sometimes people figure if you're really good at soccer or whatever. But then when you kind of get out of your local neighborhood and see the bigger pool of talent from the country and the world, it's a little less likely that's a free ride. It happens, but not as often as people probably hope it would.
So I'm wondering, so part of what I do for folks is retirement planning. How would you say this experience and what you've been having to deal with, how has that affected your plans for your future, like retirement?
Yeah. I guess I have to say I don't really think about it too much. I do, through the state, have a retirement plan, which is good that, you know, they put aside. I worry because I know that, you know, right now our biggest goal is just get our kids independent and taking care of themselves without debt. And then we'll figure it out. Maybe I'll be too old for them to care about me anymore. But I don't think I have a real chance at any kind of retirement if I'm going to have these student loans all the time. So I don't know. We've sort of joked around about maybe someday we'll move to Switzerland or something. I don't know. It's hard to kind of look that far into the future at this point. Because, like I said, I know people who have retired either on Social Security or other pensions and see those garnished because of the student loan thing. So that's also why I've decided I've got to start being more activist and less victim. I felt sort of like, woe is me. You know, I've had this hard time and it isn't fair. And then I realized, yeah, but what am I going to do about it? I have to become an activist. And so I'm looking for ways. You know, it was really great that I'm able to be a part of this podcast and talk to you. The article in Rolling Stone sort of fell on my lap and really blew my mind that and I'm hopeful that maybe that's my retirement, is sort of, I'm just going to start working diligently for the next, I'm 45 right now, for the next however many years, I'm just going to work diligently for change in this issue. And so I'm starting a little group here in Southern Maine, trying to pull together people, first of all, just to show support for people that are struggling, and then to see if we can work together to effect some change and try to fix this problem.
Sounds good. Sounds like a great plan.
I hope so.
Well, one of the things I like to do to wrap up our conversation is to ask if you had any piece of advice that you would pass on to an aspiring college student or high school student.
Boy, that's hard. I really want to say, follow your passion like we always do, right? Go and find your dream. But I guess remember that, to be realistic, stay anchored. You know, it's easy to get caught up in the American dream thing of college and the beautiful, you know, green grass of the quad and all of the things you're going to do while you're at college that are going to be so much fun. It's such a great experience, college is. But stay anchored in reality of knowing that this isn't, you know, just about the amazing fun and friends you're going to make and all that, but that it's really a practical investment, or should be, to your future. So stay anchored, I guess, is my advice. And like we've been talking about, educate yourself, do the research, don't assume anything about, you know, particularly about loans, but even just about the investment in college. You know, I don't remember what the statistic is, but a lot of it's a pretty high percentage of people have a degree other than what they are, their profession. You know, most people do something else. And so maybe also be flexible and take your time and be patient, because it's funny that we want everyone to go to college right out of high school when I think I wasn't ready. I think I was ready for I was ready for college maybe by the time I was in my, you know, like 24 or 25 years old, and I started to sort of settle down a little bit. So don't rush. You know, I think we all feel like you got to hurry, get the turn 18, go to college, get your 4-year degree, get a career. You know, take your time and be smart.
Great advice. All right. Well, Scott, I want to thank you very, very much for talking with us and sharing what is really a very powerful story.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been good talking with you.
I think your story will definitely resonate with a lot of listeners, and I hope that they are able to both, find a positive way out of their situation, yeah, like you mentioned, like you did, and or avoid, you know, getting into that situation to mm-hmm. start with. So thank you so much for your advice and for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
I'd like to thank Scott for talking with us today and sharing his deeply personal story with our listeners. And thank you for listening to our program. Be sure to check over the show notes for details from our conversation. I invite you to listen to our other episodes at aveafp.com. That's AVEAF like financial, P like planning.com. And please join our exclusive podcast community on Facebook at Financial Side of Life. Thank you for tuning in.